What's up? We're back. Welcome.
Yo, what's up?
Cannabis Insider in episode 2 of this week. Real quick, before Javier Hasse goes on his wonderful news, beautiful baritone lyric voice for us. A ton of amazing interviews, guys. So Verano, Jane Technologies, and oh my God, oh, Accelerant Manufacturing. We talked to all three of them on Tuesday. This week, we're releasing all of our interviews from MJ Biz.
Oh, yeah.
All of our
so
so far on Tuesday, release Dutchy. Also, big news from Dutchy. Ross and Zach stepped down, but you chatted with Ross at MJ Biz. Mm-hmm. Investor awareness, really some good insights on M&A and real estate. We also chatted with Rob Seekers from Polaris Equity Group. And then yesterday, we released Boston Beer Company and High Tide.
And High Tide.
And then I think today and tomorrow, we have more videos that are being released. So, So tons of good content coming out, guys. Let us know what you think. We want to hear from you. What do you want us to be asking these executives, right? That being said, I'm here with the one, the only Argentinian action figure, Javier Hasse, here to talk about some cannabis. What's up, brother?
Doing great. Actually, talking about great content, Mr. Aaron Thomas, our producer. Are we ready to show one of the interviews that we did at MJ Biz? It's an interesting one with Exhibit. Can we take a quick look at that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll throw it up on the stream for you.
Yep. Exhibit at MJ BizCon. X, tell us, what you've been up to in the cannabis space?
Right now, we just are expanding the brand Napalm. We're doing what we can to give back to the community. This is a culture. It's the long haul. So we've been working with a lot of people, working with expanding and making a lot of great relationships happen. So that's what we've been doing.
Do you see legalization happening in the next few years?
Even if it does, it doesn't mean that it's going to be the end-all, be-all or magic, you know, a magic solution to all of our things that we're trying to build with this industry.
Well said.
So we're making a lot of leeway and a lot of headway when it comes to figuring out where cannabis lands. It's not like alcohol. It's not like clothing. It is based on a culture, and you can't just throw money at it. And a lot of the people that are coming in from Big Pharma are going to learn that the hard way. But it's been able to give us some real insight on what that means. And we're willing to work with people that want to stabilize this, but it's overtaxed. There is a lot of things that are happening in California that shouldn't be duplicated across the country. But everybody's kind of coming into their own. I'm excited about the emerging East Coast market. I'm excited about New York coming online. Some people are there already. But until they fix it and come with a standardized regulation for cannabis, the legacy market is going to continue to thrive. It's not going to be a stable market for anyone, and it's going to continue. But as you can see, this doesn't stop it from growing. You know, we're still here.
Last one. What is next for Napalm?
What's next for Napalm? Dabs.
Nice.
Just leaves.
The man gave it to us. Honestly, great, short, sweet, awesome interview. And boy, is he right. No safe banking bill is this end-all, be-all magic solution. Federal regulation is just the start. I mean, well said. An awesome interview, Javi.
It was fun. Here's a good question from the chat. Actually, some shout-outs from the chat today. It's very active. Shout-out to Rusticale, Travis Owens, Charles Benson, Chris Larson, Melanie Hutchison, Joe Donnelly. Here, Chris Larson is asking, how do you guys feel about a constitutional amendment forcing Congress to end the prohibition? I would love that. I don't know if it's possible. You know, I'm sure it's easier to pass a law than to do a full constitutional amendment. But I would love to hear what you, Elliot, think and why Chris is asking this question. Like, where does the question come from?
I can fake it till I make it about a lot of things. I cannot fake it till I make it about how that would happen. So, Chris, if you want to actually drop in the chat, man, what you're thinking, I'd be interested in reading it and hearing more from you, man. Sounds very interesting. Joe Donnelly, my man, CFC Mosaic Construction. Awesome to see you in the chat. Rustic Kale, welcome back. Awesome. We have a really cool show today. Javi, a lot of things happening in Nevada mm-hmm. today. I thought we should call out the home of MJ BizCon in Vegas. We saw some consumption lounge licenses go out from their lottery. Mm-hmm. Note from that, I didn't see Planet 13 in those. It is a lottery, so it has nothing to do with a guarantee or anything like that. But a lot of the bigger players, I didn't really see included in there. So just a note. That being said, they did have 10 social equity licenses and mm-hmm. 20 established retail businesses that got it, and then 10 more, I think.
Yeah, just 40 licenses in total. Yeah. Very interesting. And I like that how they did that little division, right? Like, okay, yeah. we'll do half of the licenses for operating businesses that have already proven themselves, 10 for social equity and 10 for like new entrants, right? So that you can keep the market diverse while at the same time ensuring that at least 20 or 30 of these licenses will be working correctly, right? The established operators and the social equity operators, I'm sure we'll get it right.
Another thing to mention about Nevada, which I think is just honestly a small snippet of what we're probably seeing behind the scenes nationwide, the Nevada Board of Pharmacy is appealing a court decision ruling, mm-hmm. ruling its classification of marijuana as a Schedule I drug is unconstitutional. So first of all, that court ruling was right on. Well done to that court. I think it's the 8th District or whatever. But the Nevada Board of Pharmacy fighting it. Pharmaceutical industry is fighting it, fighting marijuana. No surprise there.
Very interesting stuff. You know what also, here's another news item that I found very interesting. There is a new way to measure DUIs for cannabis, and it's an eye scanner. So this company called Gaze, it's a Montana-based company, developed a device that can scan users' eyes to detect if they're driving under the influence of cannabis. The founder of this company, Fitchler, the founder of Gaze, quickly came out and said, like, the first thing he said is, I preface all of this by saying I am in favor of legalizing cannabis. I am doing this because I see a clear need at the federal level to have some product to detect spoilage so that we can keep the roads safe. But you know how he felt the need to go, like, just in case, I'm not anti-cannabis. I mean, pro-safety.
A lot of these they're positioning themselves as technology companies within the industry, which is the interesting part. There's another one that's international that was doing the same thing where they were actually, it was to come down from a high, was their technology mm-hmm. that they were selling to hospitals for people who got too high. So, I mean, these companies are actually, they're speaking at cannabis events. They're in there with the cannabis crowd, they feel that it's technology that furthers the industry and furthers the regulation normalization of the industry.
But here's the thing, and these are a bunch of valid questions in the chat, right? How long do they consider you being under the influence? That will be determined by the law. It isn't just yet, I think, in most jurisdictions. Another one says, Rustic Kale says, how accurate is this device? It will be probably pretty accurate. If not, the government will not implement it. The one caveat for this is, can it differentiate between THC consumption levels, right? And how do you treat medical cannabis patients, right? Do you have to choose between driving to work and taking your medication? You would never tell someone they can't drive under the influence of insulin. Now, where is the line, you know, between road safety and personal rights?
Brings you to an interesting point about what do you compare it to? Is it medicine or do you compare it to alcohol? I mean, do you see that study that came out from William Patterson University? Super interesting about how they compared it in 10 states between 2010 and 2019 that had decriminalized marijuana. Adults aged 18 to 24, alcohol use increased 6%. Now, I don't think I got all the variables, but I hope there's a S ton of variables in this study. Otherwise, it's mute. It's mute.
No, it's not. So they're clear that it's like, we know this very well. Correlation does not mean causation. Right.
They don't say that in the article, though. They don't say it. Like, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying, like, they're presenting this strictly, and the headline was, it causes increased alcohol use when cannabis is decriminalized.
Let's see about this. Someone is getting in trouble. No, I'm kidding.
All I'm saying is, you know, just like how do you look at it? When you look at what you compare it to, I feel like they're going to regulate it similarly to alcohol. You know, they're not going to regulate it similarly to insulin.
Well, that's not great, to be very honest, and being fair to cannabis, medical cannabis patients.
I must say,
right? You cannot say,
I'm not saying it's right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's probably going to be what happens.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I agree. I'm just saying it will be a highly disappointing result for sure, like a disappointing outcome.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. Javier, what's happening?
Rapid fire. Yeah, let's do it.
Minute.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, 1 minute. Very interesting article about a Swiss cannabis company called Alpen by Nicolas José Rodriguez. Go to benzinga.com/cannabis to find out what this company is doing. From Qatar, interesting news as an Argentine NGO called Argentine Cannabis Confederation brought a flag for their cannabis advocacy group to the stadium for every Argentina match, and it was the largest flag in the stadium. So the photos are pretty impressive, and in a country where they're not pro-cannabis at all. So some interesting news. Legal cannabis turned 10 years old in Colorado. Still a lot to learn by, but the sky hasn't fallen, and positive results abound. Go to benzinga.com/cannabis to read this awesome article by Maureen Meehan, our talented and humorous editor. And a couple more that I just think it's interesting to highlight. One is pop culture, why ayahuasca is Miley Cyrus's favorite substance and how it supported her veganism. And a very fun story out of Mexico where they caught a big drug lord, and I mean big drug lord, one like a cartel head, because he appeared in a music video. There's this genre of music in Mexico called narco corrido, and it's songs about narcos and criminal organizations in the drug space. And they just like show off their feats and their money in this genre. And this guy was so vain, they called him El YouTuber. And they found El YouTuber because he showed up in a music video on YouTube like an idiot.
I will say, he probably didn't think they'd be monitoring the music videos. Although,
oh, yes, they are. It is very well known. This is something that's going, like, this is a 20-year-old musical phenomenon, right? They know.
I have no idea.
This is not the first time this happened.
Yeah, maybe I'm uneducated about it. That's honestly hysterical, though. Honest, you did so much, and you were reigning over an empire of sin stocks, and you get caught from a music video. I mean, that's just irony at its finest. That being said, Javi, I got to cut your 1 minute off. Beautiful. You went 3 minutes. We have to
Let's go
to our first interview. Aaron Thomas, please send over our guest. There he is, Andrew Wilson, Grower IQ CEO. What's going on, my friend? How are you?
Hey, I'm great. How about you?
Oh, we're good, man. We're good. Thrilled to dive a little bit more into the tech side, into the non-plant touching side. Tell us about you, man. What are you doing over at Grower IQ?
Absolutely. Yeah, well, Grower IQ handles the operations for licensed producers around the world. It's everything from the seed planting through to processing, through harvest, through sale. All of that, every single step needs to be tracked. And it just, you know, as you can imagine, gets really complicated on paper or manual. And so Grower IQ comes in, and the idea is to make it a lot simpler using tech.
I gotta ask here, and then Javi, you can do a couple in a row. So ERP is very centric on regulations, right? You track in a certain way based on the market you're in. So I mean, doing it in different states is enough challenge as it is in the U.S., but doing it in markets around the world, I mean, you have to know a lot about a lot,
mm-hmm,
right? How do you guys keep up with that?
Yeah, it can be a challenge. And, you know more than anyone, really, the pace of change, right? Things we've seen about Germany, about Czech Republic, about, you know, all of the we're getting tons of interesting inbound from places like Argentina and Ecuador and There you go. Yeah. So it can be a challenge. I think the really exciting part is that our platform was designed to the Canadian, like a federal standard in the first place. And in many respects, other jurisdictions sort of used a federal model when kind of implementing or taking ideas to their own jurisdictions. So that makes our job a little bit easier. And other than that, it's having great partners on the ground, great customers who keep their ear to the ground for any kind of regulatory change. And through that network, we sort of hear how things go and can adjust really quickly that way.
I'm curious, how many clients do you have in Latin America, right? Because I see you're only active in Ecuador at the time, but when I Google you being in Argentina, I get a couple of results in English. The third one is in Spanish, and I love that. Because most companies in the space are not catering to Latino audiences at all. Mm-hmm. Even those companies operating and even selling product in states like California, Texas, Florida, where like there's millions of people who speak Spanish as a first language. So like how many clients do you have in Ecuador or the rest of Latin America? And when do you choose to take that leap toward also, you know, doing like Spanish content and your Spanish website and stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. 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 It's a great question. I mean, I think I'm a little biased because I me encanta el español. So we translated the entire platform. We have the entire platform. We have all of our articles, all of our content. We've got a team in Colombia that handles most of our kind of Latin America and inbound. We just exhibited at Expo MediWeed this weekend, down in Medellin. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of table stakes. We view it as table stakes. Let's get into the local jurisdictions, speak their language, have local support, have that comfort level, I think is really important in Latin America, kind of from a societal sort of cultural perspective. We always hear the question, who do you have on the ground? Who can help me? And so I think that's our approach. It's a little bit different than others. It's very, customer service oriented. Is how we want to differentiate ourselves.
Yeah, there's must be a lot of data, right, with the companies that you work with. So, I mean, are you seeing a lot of companies expand internationally with who you work with? And actually, before you answer that question, I'd love to know, what's the breadth? Like, how many companies do you work with? And or can you tell us a little bit more about the depth of your clientele?
Yeah. It grows so quickly. You know, we're in 14 countries right now, everything from micro licenses all the way through to large public companies, big producers. So I think the breadth is there. It's really interesting and different license types across different jurisdictions as well. So that can make things really interesting. For what we do is we have modules for every team. So if, for example, you're perhaps not doing cultivation, you're doing processing, then perhaps you wouldn't use the GrowIQ cultivation module. You would use like warehouse and processing and CRM and the quality management system. and so I think that's how we handle different types of clients with the same tool.
Mm-hmm. And then internationally, do you see a lot of companies using you across country lines, across borders, or do you see it pretty staying at home right now?
Yeah, no, I think one of the really, our top markets are certainly we have a good presence in Latin America, but I think, South Africa, I think Portugal, a number of different key cannabis hotspots around the world. South Africa, for example, almost all of them have a business model predicated on access to Europe. And so a lot of that production, the production standards, the quality that they want to follow, it has to be GMP, it has to be EU GMP in order to gain access into Europe. And so many of those folks, they have operations in South Africa or they have operations in Portugal as well. And because of that international model and our international model, we're able to serve local jurisdictions in both places. And you can kind of swap between your sites and your facilities pretty easily.
Why do you choose to have such a big international focus when, most companies are on the show are always telling us like, I mean, the U.S. is a big enough opportunity to be, focusing on other places. So what's different for Grower IQ?
Yeah, it's because everybody said that. I think we have a really international mindset. We're in Canada. We started in Canada. We have an international mindset. It's, many of our team members are around the world. Our team is global. And so I think we have a bit of a different perspective, and we try to use that and bring that to the company and to our the clients that we serve. And I think it's really found an interesting niche, right? Because if no other groups are thinking this way, then we're really uniquely positioned to help serve them in a really great way.
Can you talk to us a little bit? You mentioned Germany earlier. What's your perspective of what they're rolling out there? Talk to us a little bit about what that industry is going to look like from the operational side.
Yeah. Oh, it's exciting. You know, things happen in Germany, and I believe our website is sort of a bit of a leading indicator. You know, something happens in Germany and we get 10,000 people come to the site all of a sudden. And excuse me. And so I think it's really a really exciting. There are exciting developments. The way that they're planning the model, I think, is they're planning ahead. They're being smart about incorporating different stakeholders. You know, I think we've seen this sort of announcements ahead of time, which is exciting. It's progress in itself. However, it's not a law. It's not legislation. It's not making a fundamental change in the market at the moment. But it's such a huge step. And, you know, given the economic engine that Germany is, where Germany goes, in many respects, goes the rest of Europe. And as a block, right, it can be and is primed to be a really incredible player on the global stage cannabis market.
I'm trying to better understand the product, right? Because it's not a seed to sale tracking. It's not for legal purposes, right? It's to increase productivity, to increase yields. Can you explain a little bit more on that front? Like, what is an ERP in general for those who don't know? And then how is a cannabis ERP different?
Sure.
Because I'm looking at it and it's totally different from like whatever the ERP I use for a Blunt or a Latin American outlet. It's like I use an ERP that is like a basic corporate ERP, right?
Yep.
Tracking salaries and expenses.
Yep. Yeah. It's a really great question. I think we started from the perspective of just regulatory compliance. Started in Health Canada with in Canada for Health Canada, the just incredible, you know, thousands of columns of data that they ask for on reporting every single month. So we designed a tool that has compliance at its core, right, from the regulatory perspective. And then what we did was we built on modules for every single team to help get at that sort of higher level function that you were talking about, business improvement, analysis, data, A/B testing your business across multiple facets in order to improve.
I'm going to ask you something super specific. And I don't know if you have the answer to this offhand, but I am very curious.
Yeah, I also think it till I make it.
Yeah, there we go. I'm talking. So in all the countries that you work in, is there one where you see the yields coming from this country, the cultivations in this country tend to be stronger than others? The plants produced tend to be stronger on a more consistent level?
Oh, that's so tricky to say. I think the challenge is that there are just like so many incredible producers within each market, right? It's a variety of the production practices, the team that they have, the environmental conditions, and how well things go. So I think we see a total range,
and it depends on the environmental side.
Specific producer.
Yeah, I was trying to get to the Colombia versus Canada grow.
I know that it's the emails from all our customers.
Touche.
You should have said South Africa.
Yeah, fair enough. That being said, anything else you feel we should know about the international markets? You know, as we move into 2023, we're all very, very focused here on the U.S., right? So for legislative reasons, among anything else, you know, but it's also just been a tough time financially for a lot of companies in this space. But as we look at possible expansions once this downturn ends and starts to go back up, what should we keep an eye on internationally?
Mm-hmm. Oh, there are so many exciting places. I mean, I think new jurisdictions coming online all the time. We're seeing just tons of interest from, say, Mexico, right? Mexico, there are groups that are trying to sort of get in early, understand the regulatory framework environment, kind of be first to market there. Such a huge, 120 million people in the country, such a huge market. There's going to be tons of product required. So, you know, I think like you were saying about some of the states and what Exhibit referenced about the evolution of the regs is, I think we've seen that. We've seen it play out in Canada. We've seen it play out in many jurisdictions. Is there's a total life cycle flow that happens where each new jurisdiction comes and evolves, and hopefully the stakeholders are responsible enough to, and the regulators responsible enough to absorb that feedback and continuously improve. So I think we're right at the start of something exciting, and we follow Benzinga religiously over here, and you just can't open up the portal, the platform without seeing news about new exciting jurisdictions coming online. So we're right here in the right moment.
Awesome. Well, that being said, Andrew Wilson, CEO of Grower IQ, very much appreciate you being on. And honestly, looking forward to doing this again, man. Keeping up with what's happening internationally.
You got to come back soon and tell us a little bit about the raise. I know you raised $3 million. We wanted to talk about that, but we got so sidetracked with international, which is like the best outcome for me. So we'll see you again soon.
Yeah, episode 2, Andrew.
It was a pleasure. Yeah.
Thank you, man. Awesome. Very cool. Honestly, I'm sorry I got a sidetracked there, but it's something
that was perfect. Who
cares? We sometimes forget about that, you know?
Yeah, we should call it the Cannabis Insider Sidetrack Show.
The Sidetrack Show. Awesome. Well, that being said, we're going to keep it rolling here, y'all. Thank you for sticking with us. Also, Ace, you made me laugh. I was trying to hold it in. Maybe if SBF used cannabis instead of meth, we wouldn't be in this poop show right now. If only, man. That being said, let's bring over our next guest, James Whitcomb of Frontier Risk. Welcome in. How are you, James?
Good. What's going on? I want to start by saying I am not a meth user, as a segue from that last comment.
So. Yeah. Well, so boring.
Yeah. Get off the stage. Come on, man.
Yeah, exactly.
So, James, I mean, talk to us, man. Like, how'd you get into cannabis? What's going on?
Yeah. Well, I was one of the early team members at what was then called Certera, which won one of the original 5 licenses in Florida. Name a while later to Parallel. Grew the company to what I guess is still the largest private MSO out there. And I spent the last year I was there. I was there for 6 years, spent the last year running it as CEO and chairman, and tried to make a name for myself by being sort of like anti-MSO gang. A lot of social equity initiatives, just, you know, really eat, sleep, and breathe the space. And frankly, I got into the business I'm in now because every single year when our insurance renewals came up, they just kept getting worse and worse. Certain carriers were to exit the market. So we're here to try to solve the insurance problem in cannabis.
You one of your claims is, you know, cannabis insurance doesn't make sense. Please elaborate. It's a strong statement, which I agree with, to be very clear, but please elaborate.
Yeah, well, I think it's a little bit hard to argue with. I mean, those who have tried to apply for it and the rates they've gotten, you know, probably feel the same way. It doesn't make sense because it's too expensive, the limits are too low, and the laundry list of exclusions in these policies, you know, in some cases excludes the very core business activities that these cannabis companies are actually doing. And it begs the question, why are these companies even buying these policies in the first place if they don't cover, you know, what you're trying to do, or if the coverage isn't adequate? And the answer is, for a lot of these lines, they're required, you know, at the state level, legally. And then as you get bigger and bigger, there are market forces, capital market forces, that require you to have certain other lines of coverage, like directors and officers insurance, things like that. So it doesn't make sense because it's overpriced and the coverage is inadequate. I would argue the entire cannabis industry is underinsured by a magnitude of 5 to 10 times.
Can I interject here just quick? So we've had a few insurance experts on over the past few months. You know, I don't need to name names, but every time there's one line that keeps coming up, and it's, you know, we help you find the holes in your insurance. We help you find the gaps. We help you fill those. And I'm just curious, I feel like I hear that from every insurance provider. Who is giving this insurance that has all these holes in it? Like, where is it coming from if every insurance provider is the one fixing that issue and the holes? And I know it's a silly question, but
it's a great question.
Like, I'm just curious, how did we get here?
Yeah, how did we get? Well, so I think there are two questions in that. So first of all, you know, and I follow the show, but I can't remember which insurance experts you had on. I'm a cannabis expert that's learning to be an insurance expert. And my approach is I'm not here to help you find the holes. I know there are holes. I don't, you know, you don't need me to tell you that. There are incumbent, you know, large carriers in there and reinsurance players. And, you know, I think the reason we got here is really twofold. First of all, if you're a 100-year-old insurance company with a $30 billion balance sheet and your general counsel is kind of telling you, well, I think this is above board, but I can't really chisel that in stone. Are you going to really risk your legacy business on a foray into this space when it's not totally clear? It's clear to me the way I interpret it was. And that's the reason why a lot of big law firms and now banks are getting involved in the space on the investment banking side. They interpret it the same way. The second reason in terms of how we got here is, let's not forget, insurance is an industry that is based on historical data to predict the probability of future events occurring. In a new industry, it's kind of hard to have a long track record of historical data where your actuarial consultant can, you know, put on like the clear visor and type up and get those actuarial models going. But the reality is there is data in cannabis, right? Listening to Andrew talk, your last guest, you know, he's doing it, right? I mean, he's providing a lot of different touch points, you know, that all together form an ERP system. If we can take that and show it to the reinsurers and say, hey, this part of the value chain that you thought was really risky, you actually don't really understand it. We do, because we're operators. Like, I've seen C1, D1 rooms blow up in extraction, right? I've seen crops die, you know, because of certain pests. I've seen certain events take off single layer polyurethane roofs and in grow houses, but not double layer, right? And I've seen workers' comp claims win or get settled because of the fact that they followed published SOPs or not. So we can take all that data and we can say it to the reinsurer. We can tell the reinsurers, hey, this isn't as risky as you think, and therefore your pricing ought to come down.
So I'm glad you brought up reinsurers, because that was my following question. What is the importance of reinsurance participants for any insurance space, and especially for cannabis, right? I tend to understand reinsurance as an investment. I like it because it's counter-cyclical, or non-cyclical. It does not respond to market volatility, but I don't fully understand why it would be important for the industry or for an insurance provider.
Yeah, I mean, it's everything, quite frankly, because they are the capacity providers. And let's go back to your first question, right, where you may have had some folks on the show that say, we're going to help you find the gaps in your policies. Well, they may just be brokers, right? And brokers, what they do is they go and bid out your submission to several different capacity markets, like whether those are carriers with balance sheets that can underwrite the risk or whether they're reinsurance vehicles. And with probably the biggest reason, other than the other two I mentioned in terms of why we're here, is because there is no capacity, right? There is not enough balance sheet capacity to underwrite the liabilities that the cannabis industry is serving up. So the key to normalizing this industry is to get more and more reinsurers who are right on the fence but don't quite understand it or haven't convinced their general counsel or board of directors to jump into the space, bringing those people in. And it's like any other market. When there's competition, prices will drop. Cannabis, you know, quite frankly, my observation, being in it for better part of a decade now, it's a lot of guys and gals sitting in a circle saying, this is a commodity that will never be commoditized. They're wrong. They're totally wrong, right? That's why a lot of what's happened in the industry has happened, especially in the last 2 or 3 years. Everyone's feeling the hurt. It's the same thing for insurance. A lot of people are saying capacity will never come into the space. They'll never get it. It's not true. There's there's too much demand. They're going to come in, but they need to be educated on what is fundamentally risky and not risky in a cannabis supply chain.
Diving more into your business, you're going into a pretty heavy business in insurance, and honestly, you're taking on a problem and you're offering a solution, which may not be the case with what I'm about to say. Would you consider starting to insure other industries, other sectors, other related types of businesses, agriculture maybe? I'm curious from your business standpoint, what you're looking at there.
Yeah, look, I mean, we're really interested in psychedelics also. I think psychedelics are moving at a pace that fits better into a federal framework, and that may happen more quickly than cannabis fitting into a federal framework. And I don't just mean that from a U.S.-centric perspective. There's a lot of good work being done in Europe where, you know, this stuff will be normalized and regulated at the European federal level. I would venture to say it's going to be a close call, whether, you know, psychedelics, let's be specific, like psilocybin, ketamine, et cetera, will be federally regulated in the U.S., you know, before cannabis. At this rate, it's going to be close, right, just given all the clinical research going on. And I think our team is one that has a lot of experience in regulated industries. And, you know, politics is in our DNA in terms of forecasting what's going to break when, and what's going to be built when and regulated when. And so I think we're decently equipped to tackle psychedelics, and there's a huge need there as well. But that pricing asymmetry that we see in cannabis insurance may not exist in psychedelics because of what I just said, because it may be federally regulated first. Something's federally regulated first and federally legal, then regular way insurance companies can kind of dive in without our help, or at least not as much help as they're going to need for cannabis. So we'll see.
You touched international, and this is, I think, my last question. Let's circle back to the discussion that we were having with Andrew before this. Do you consider any international opportunities? Are you already active in any international markets? What are the complexities, right? Because taking a technology, right, like the one we're discussing, right, like a few minutes ago, it's translating it, adapting it a little bit. But for insurance, the framework, the legal framework, the regulations are very, very different. So, I mean, what are you doing internationally? Do you have any plans for international, and what are the complexities involved in all that?
Yeah, look, we're U.S. focused for now. I think, you know, different sell side equity research has differing opinions on when the European market's going to be bigger than the U.S. market, whether you think it's 29 or 30 or 35. I think the space we can play in is educating about what's risky in a value chain. Like I said before, I mean, if we talk internationally, again, anytime you talk internationally, you're dealing with like an automatically federal framework, which makes it easier for insurers to touch the space. That doesn't mean that they have the historical or current data on like what we call loss runs, historical loss runs, you know, to be able to more accurately predict whether or not they're going to take a loss on a policy in the future. And so I think that's where we can bridge the gap. And I think there's an opportunity to do that in Europe. Really encouraged by what I'm seeing in Germany. And I think any time countries like that take a much more clinical approach, all these things come down to decisions made at the board of directors level. Anytime a country takes that kind of clinical approach, you know, with evidence-based research, where there's more of that in Europe and frankly a lot of international markets, even Thailand, than the US, it's going to be easier for, you know, insurance executives and boards of directors to get a little bit
more comfortable. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's end with this question from the chat. Restakale, a good one here. What's the riskiest part of the supply chain for an insurer?
Love that question.
All right. Well, here's what I'll say. When I was running Parallel, every morning, my biggest fear was waking up to a text message where my COO might have hypothetically texted me, "Hey, this delivery driver in Florida, who's a full-time employee, a W-2 employee, because you're required to be vertically integrated, They went out on a delivery run. They were high, and God forbid, they ran over a family in a crosswalk, right? I mean, that's the nightmare scenario that any vertically integrated operator or anyone working in last mile, I think, has to deal with. And that's on top of where theft is really rampant, right, in home delivery. We hear a lot of these stories about dispensaries getting robbed and how safe banking can combat that. Last mile delivery just is inherently super risky. Number two, extraction rooms, they blow up. It happens. So,
wow. I mean, both sound terrible, but honestly, yeah. Great answers, man. And very, it really puts into perspective for us who haven't worked as an operator. Javi just consumes a lot, but.
No, I don't. I've grown more than I've consumed.
And there you go. I don't know if I believe that, but James Whitcomb, CEO of Frontier Risk, thank you so much for being with us. Really appreciate it, man. And the data-driven aspect is something that I assume we're going to dive into a lot more in the future with you, but thank you again for your time.
Right on. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Awesome. You know, I love the word data.
So you want to perpetuate, that myth that I consume a lot.
Absolutely.
I will get back to you. Or at you, not to you.
You get back to me about your consumption levels. That's fine. No, Javi, honestly, man, listen, we're in cannabis. Like, we're not going to light up on the show, but like, we are friendly to consumption. Do you?
Oh, yeah. No, I have no problem with that. I have no problem with that.
Yeah. That being
but
said,
it's all about what is the right amount, quantity, dosing for you, how you work, how it works for you. For me personally, for instance, I cannot concentrate during the day if I smoke. Granted, I'm talking about THC, not necessarily like very low THC kind of stuff, which would be a different scenario. For me, it's a relaxation tool. I only enjoy it while in bed, to be.
You know who I think does a really good, not to cut you off, but who does a really good job of putting like on their products, like, this is made to do this. This won't get you high, but it's supposed to make you chill, not fall asleep. This does this to you. This is meant to give you super high, is Groom. I think they're Groom. G-R-O with an umlaut.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Groom. So, I always call them Grung, like Grunk.
Apparently it's Groom, so get it right.
Groom.
But they're an edibles company. They're a multi-state edibles player. And I got to interview their CEO at MJ Biz. So that either came out today or it'll come out tomorrow. Just check the YouTube channel. And we'll be releasing it in our newsletter and such.
I tried the Groom edibles in Chicago after a conference. They gave me some and I love them. Yeah. But it was also that experience where I told you I just forgot I took an edible, and just like an hour later I was sitting at a fancy restaurant by myself at the bar just trying to figure out what was going on. I'm like, why do I feel drunk? I literally just ordered one glass of wine and I took one sip and already I'm like tipsy.
Y'all know Javi just got mad at me for furthering the consumption game here, and this is the story.
Nah, it's all good.
Javi Arjas, love you, man. Honestly, two great interviews today, very ancillary-based discussions, which are very necessary to build this industry in a normalized, regulated way. So thank you all for tuning in. Rustikill, great questions. Ace, thank you so much. Joe Donnelly, everybody who is in the chat, appreciate you guys. We will not be on next week. Tuesday, Thursday, we are hosting crypto and fintech events in New York. Don't worry, SBF will not be there. That being said, if you're in New York, bz-crypto.com or bzawards.com for the two events that we're hosting in New York City next week. That being said, we're back for one more week, I believe the 13th and the 15th of December, and then we're done for the year, and we'll be back in early January. But that being said, we're already filled with January guests, honestly, to the brim. So
insane. It's insane. People are like, hey, can I come on the show? It's like, no, man, we're fully booked.
Yeah,
let's look at February.
Guys, share with your friends. We appreciate the share. Show us you shared it. I'll give you something. I'll give you some swag or, I don't know, a ticket to Miami or whatever.
I like that.
Yeah, right? So with that being said, we got two more shows this year, 13th and 15th. Tune in 4 o'clock Eastern time. Javier Haas, anything you want to say?
Benzinga.com/cannabis for your daily dose of cannabis news. Don't forget, favorite us, add us to your direct links, whatever. We'll try and make it easier and easier and easier for you to remember every day. If you think it would be helpful to have like a little icon on your phone that takes you directly to our Benzinga Cannabis landing, let us know.
And we'll boom.
Develop that for
and
you.
And boom. Awesome. We're done, y'all. Have a great rest of your Thursday and weekend.